Chapter 7. More problems.
Can I speak to you a moment, ma'am?
Oh dear, said Tuppence, not more problems. She was descending the stairs from the bookroom, brushing dust off herself because she was dressed in her best coat and skirt, to which she was thinking of adding a feather hat, and then proceeding out to a tea she had been asked to attend by a new friend she had met at the White Elephant sale. It was no moment, she felt, to listen to the further difficulties of Beatrice.
Well, no, it's not exactly a problem. It's just something I thought you might like to know about.
Oh, said Tuppence, still feeling that this might be another problem in disguise. She came down carefully.
I'm in rather a hurry because I have to go out to tea. Well, it's just about someone as you asked about, it seems. Name of Mary Jordan, that was right? Only they thought perhaps it was Mary Johnson. You know, there was a Belinda Johnson as worked at the post office a good long time ago.
Yes, said Tuppence, and there was a policeman called Johnson too, someone told me.
Yes, well, anyway, this friend of mine, Gwenda, her name is, you know the shop? The post office is on one side, and envelopes and dirty cars and things the other side, and some china things too, you see, and...
I know, said Tuppence, it's called Mrs. Garrison's, or something like that.
Yes, but it isn't really Garrison nowadays, as keeps it. Quite a different name. But anyway, this friend of mine, Gwenda, she thought you might be interested to know, because she says, as she had heard of a Mary Jordan, what lived here a long time ago. A very long time ago. Lived here in this house, I mean.
Oh, lived in the Laurels.
Well, it wasn't called that then. And she'd heard something about her, she said. And so she thought you might be interested. There was some rather sad story about her. She had an accident or something. Anyway, she died.
You mean she was living in this house when she died?
Was she one of the family?
No, I think the family was called Parker, a name of that kind. A lot of Parkers there were. Parkers or Parkinson, something like that. I think she was just staying here.
I believe Mrs. Griffin knows about it. Do you know Mrs. Griffin?
Oh, very slightly, said Tuppence.
Matter of fact, that's when I'm going to tea this afternoon.
I talked to her the other day at the sale.
I hadn't met her before.
She's a very old lady. She's older than she looks, but I think she's got a very good memory. I believe one of the Parkinson boys was her godson.
What was his Christian name?
Oh, it was, Alec, I think.
Some name like that.
Alec or Alex?
What happened to him?
Did he grow up? Go away, become a soldier or a sailor or something like that?
Oh, no, he died.
Oh, yes, I think he's buried right here.
It's one of those things, I think, as people used to know much about, one of those things with a name like a Christian name.
You mean somebody's disease?
Hodgkin's disease or something.
No, it was a Christian name of some kind.
I don't know, but they say as your blood grows the wrong colour or something.
Nowadays, I believe they take blood away from you then that and give you some good blood again or something like that, but even then you usually die, they say.
Mrs. Billings, the cake shop, you know, she had a little girl died of that, and she was only 7. They say it takes them very young.
Leukemia?
Oh, now fancy you knowing.
Yeah, that was its name, I'm sure.
But they say now, as one day, there'll maybe be a cure for it, you know?
Just like nowadays, they give you inoculations and things to cure you from typhoid or whatever it is.
Well, said Tuppence, that's very interesting.
Poor little boy.
Oh, he wasn't very young. He was at school somewhere, I think. Must have been about 13 or 14.
Well, said Tuppence, it's all very sad.
She paused, then said,
oh, dear, I'm very late now. I must hurry off.
I dare say Mrs. Griffin could tell you a few things. I don't mean things as she'd remembered herself, but she was brought up here as a child, and she heard a lot of things. And she tells people a lot sometimes about the families that were here before. Some of the things are real scandalous, too, you know. Goings on and all that. That was, of course, in what they call Edwardian times, or Victorian times, I don't know which. You know, I should think it was Victorian, because she was still alive, the old queen. So that's Victorian, really. They talk about it as Edwardian and something called the Marlborough House set. Sort of high society, wasn't it?
Yes, said Tuppence.
Yes, high society. And goings on, said Beatrice with some fervour.
A good many goings on, said Tuppence.
Young girls doing what they shouldn't do, said Beatrice, loath to part with her mistress just when something interesting might be said.
No, said Tuppence. I believe the girls led very, well, pure and austere lives, and they married young. They're often into the peerage.
Oh dear, said Beatrice. How nice for them.
Lots of fine clothes, I suppose. Race meetings and going to dances and ballrooms.
Yes, said Tuppence. Lots of ballrooms.
Well, I knew someone once, and her grandmother had been a housemaid in one of those smart houses, you know, as they all came to. And the Prince of Wales as he was then, you know, he was Edward VII afterwards, that one, the early one. Well, he was there, and he was ever so nice to all the servants and everything else. And when she left, she took away the cake of soap that he'd used for his hands, and she kept it always. She used to show it to some of us children once.
Very thrilling for you, said Tuppence.
It must have been very exciting times.
Perhaps he stayed here in the laurels.
No, I don't think as I ever heard that.
And I would have heard it.
No, it was only Parkinson's here.
No countesses and marchionesses and lords and ladies. The Parkinsons, I think, were mostly in trade.
Very rich, you know, and all that. But still, there's nothing exciting in trade, is there?
It depends, said Tuppence.
She added, I think I ought...
Yes, you'd best be getting along, ma'am.
Yes, well, thank you very much.
I don't think I'd better put on a hat. I've got my hair awfully mussed now.
Well, you put your head in that corner, where the cobwebs is. I'll dust it off, in case you do it again.
Tuppence ran down the stairs.
Alexander ran down there, she said. Many times, I expect.
And he knew it was one of them.
I wonder more than ever now.
Chapter 8 Mrs. Griffin.
I'm so very pleased that you and your husband have come here to live, Mrs. Beresford, said Mrs. Griffin, as she poured out tea. Sugar? Milk?
She pressed forward a dish of sandwiches, and Tuppence helped herself.
It makes so much difference, you know, in the country, where one has nice neighbours, with whom one has something in common. Did you know this part of the world before?
No, said Tuppence, not at all. We had, you know, a good many different houses to go and view. Particulars of them were sent to us by estate agents. Of course, most of them were very often quite frightful. One was called Full of Old World Charm.
I know, said Mrs. Griffin. I know exactly. Old World Charm usually means that you have to put a new roof on, and that the damp is very bad. And thoroughly modernized, well, one knows what that means. Lots of gadgets one doesn't want, and usually a very bad view from the windows of really hideous houses. But the Laurels is a charming house. I expect, though, you have had a good deal to do to it.
Everyone has, in turn.
I suppose a lot of different people have lived there, said Tuppence.
Oh, yes. Nobody seems to stay very long anywhere nowadays, do they?
The Cuthbertsons were here, and the Redlands, and before that the Seymours, and after them the Joneses.
We wondered a little why it was called the Laurels, said Tuppence.
Oh, well, that was the kind of name people liked to give a house. Of course, if you go back far enough, probably to the time of the Parkinsons, I think there were laurels. Probably a drive, you know, curling round, and a lot of laurels, including those speckled ones. I never liked speckled laurels.
No, said Tuppence, I do agree with you. I don't like them either.
There seem to have been a lot of Parkinsons here, she added.
Oh, yes. I think they occupied it longer than anyone else.
Nobody seems able to tell one much about them.
Well, it was a long time ago, you see, dear. And after the... Well, I think after the trouble, you know. And there was some feeling about it, and of course, one doesn't wonder they sold the place.
It had a bad reputation, did it? Said Tuppence, taking a chance.
Do you mean the house was supposed to be insanitary or something?
Oh, no, not the house. No, really, the people, you see.
Well, of course, there was the disgrace, in a way. It was during the First War. Nobody could believe it. My grandmother used to talk about it and say that it was something to do with naval secrets, about a new submarine. There was a girl living with the Parkinsons who was said to have been mixed up with it all.
Was that Mary Jordan? Said Tuppence.
Yes. Yes, you're quite right. Afterwards, they suspected that it wasn't her real name. I think somebody had suspected her for some time.
The boy had. Alexander. Nice boy. Quite sharp, too.
Book 2. Chapter 1. A long time ago. Tuppence was selecting birthday cards. It was a wet afternoon and the post office was almost empty. People dropped letters into the postbox outside or occasionally made a hurried purchase of stamps. Then they usually departed to get home as soon as possible. It was not one of those crowded shopping afternoons. In fact, Tuppence thought she had chosen this particular day very well. Gwenda, whom she had managed to recognize easily from Beatrice's description, had been only too pleased to come to her assistance. Gwenda represented the household shopping side of the post office. An elderly woman with grey hair presided over the government business of Her Majesty's mails. Gwenda, a chatty girl, interested always in new arrivals to the village, was happy among the Christmas cards, Valentines, birthday cards, comic postcards, notepaper, and stationery, various types of chocolates and sundry china articles of domestic use. She and Tuppence were already on friendly terms.
"I'm so glad that the house has been opened up again. Prince's Lodge, I mean. Oh, I thought it had always been the Laurels. Oh, no. I don't think it was ever called that. Houses change names a lot round here. People do like giving new names to houses, you know."
"Yes, they certainly seem to," said Tuppence thoughtfully. "Even we have thought of a name or two. Oh, by the way, Beatrice told me that you knew someone once living here called Mary Jordan."
"Oh, I didn't know her, but I have heard her mentioned. In the war it was. Not the last war, the one long before that, when there used to be Zeppelins."
"Oh, I remember hearing about Zeppelins," said Tuppence. "In 1915 or 1916 they came over London. I remember I'd gone to the Army and Navy stores one day with an old great aunt, and there was an alarm.
They used to come over at night sometimes, didn't they?
Must have been rather frightening, I should think."
"Well, I don't think it was, really," said Tuppence. "People used to get quite excited. It wasn't nearly as frightening as the flying bombs in the last war. One always felt rather as though they were following you to places, following you down a street or something like that."
"Spend all your nights in the tube, did you? I had a friend in London. She used to spend all the nights in the tubes. Warren Street, I think. Everyone used to have their own particular tube station."
"Oh, I wasn't in London in the last war," said Tuppence. "I don't think I'd have liked to spend all night in the tube. Well, this friend of mine, Jenny her name was, oh, she used to love the tube. She said it was ever so much fun. You know, you had your own particular stair in the tube. It was kept for you always. You slept there, and you took sandwiches in and things, and you had fun together and talked. Things went on all night and never stopped. Wonderful, you know. Trains going on right up to the morning. She told me she couldn't bear it when the war was over and she had to go home again. Felt it was so dull, you know."
"Anyway," said Tuppence, "there weren't any flying bombs in 1914. Just the Zeppelins."
Zeppelins had clearly lost interest for Gwenda.
"It was someone called Mary Jordan I was asking about," said Tuppence. "Beatrice said you knew about her."
"Oh, not really. I just heard her name mentioned once or twice, but it was ages ago. Lovely golden hair she had, my grandmother said. German she was. One of those Fräuleins, as they were called. Looked after children, kind of a nurse. I'd been with a naval family somewhere, that was up in Scotland, I think, and afterwards she came down here. Went to a family called Parks or Perkins. She used to have one day off a week, you know, and go to London, and that's where she used to take the things, whatever they were."
What sort of things?" said Tuppence.
"I don't know. Nobody ever said much. Things she'd stolen, I expect."
"Was she discovered stealing?"
"Oh, no, I don't think so. They were beginning to suspect, but she got ill and died before that."
"What did she die of?"
"Did she die down here?"
"I suppose she went to hospital."
"No, I don't think there were any hospitals to go to then. Wasn't any welfare in those days. Somebody told me it was some silly mistake the cook made. Brought foxglove leaves into the house by mistake for spinach or for lettuce, perhaps. No, I think that was someone else. Someone told me it was deadly nightshade, but I don't believe that for a moment, because, I mean, everyone knows about deadly nightshade, don't they? And anyway, that's berries. Well, I think this was foxglove leaves, brought in from the garden by mistake. Foxglove is digoxo or some name like digit something that sounds like fingers. It's got something very deadly in it,
The doctor came and he did what he could, but I think it was too late.
Were there many people in the house when it happened?
Oh, there was quite a lot, I should think. Yes, because there were always people staying, so I've heard, and children, you know, and weekenders, and a nursery maid and a governess, I think, and parties.
Mind you, I'm not knowing all about this myself. It's only what Granny used to tell me.
And old Mr. Bodleycott talks now and then. You know, the old gardener chap as works here now and then. He was gardener there, and they blamed him at first for sending the wrong leaves, but it wasn't him as did it. It was somebody who came out of the house and wanted to help and picked the vegetables in the garden and took them in to the cook. You know, spinach and lettuce and things like that, and, I suppose they just made a mistake, not knowing much about growing vegetables. I think they said at the inquest, or whatever they had afterwards, that it was a mistake that anyone could make, because the spinach or the sorrel leaves were growing near the you see, so I suppose they just took a great handful of both leaves, possibly in a bunch together. Anyway, it was very sad, because Granny said she was a very good-looking girl with golden hair and all that, you know.
And she used to go up to London every week. Well, naturally, she'd have to have a day off.
Yes, said she had friends there. Foreigner she was, Granny says. There was some who said she was actually a German spy.
And was she?
Oh, I shouldn't think so. The gentlemen liked her all right, apparently. You know, the naval officers. And the ones up at Shelton Military Camp, too. She had one or two friends there, you know. The military camp it was.
Was she really a spy?
Oh, I shouldn't think so. I mean, my grandmother said that was what people said. It wasn't in the last war, it was ages before that.
Funny, said Toppence. How easy it is to get mixed up over the wars. I knew an old man who had a friend in the Battle of Waterloo.
Oh, fancy that. That was years before 1914.
People did have foreign nurses, what were called mamselles, as well as fraulines, whatever a fraulein is.
Very nice with children she was, Granny said. Everyone was very pleased with her and always liked her.
That was when she was living here, living at the Laurels.
Wasn't called that then, at least I don't think so. She was living with the Parkinsons, or the Perkins, some name like that, said Gwenda. What we call nowadays an au pair girl. She came from that place where the patty comes from, you know, Fortnum and Mason keep it, expensive patty for parties, half German, half French, so someone told me.
Strasbourg? Suggested Tuppence.
Yeah, that was the name. She used to paint pictures. Did one of an old great aunt of mine. Made her look too old, Aunt Fanny always said. Did one of the Parkinson boys. Old Mrs. Griffin's got it still. The Parkinson boy found out something about her, I believe. The one she painted the picture of, I mean. Godson of Mrs. Griffin, I believe he was.
Would that have been Alexander Parkinson?
Yes, that's the one. The one that's buried near the church.
Chapter 2 Introduction to Matilda, True Love, and K.K. Tuppence, on the following morning, went in search of that well-known public character in the village, known usually as Old Isaac. Or, on formal occasions, if one could remember, Mr. Bodleycott. Isaac Bodleycott was one of the local characters. He was a character because of his age. He claimed to be 90, not generally believed, and he was able to do repairs of many curious kinds. If your efforts to ring up the plumber met with no response, you went to old Isaac Bodleycott. Mr. Bodleycott, whether or not he was in any way qualified for the repairs he did, had been well acquainted for many of the years of his long life with every type of sanitation problem, bathwater problems, difficulties with geysers, and sundry electrical problems on the side. His charges compared favorably with a real, live, qualified plumber, and his repairs were often surprisingly successful. He could do carpentering, he could attend to locks, he could hang pictures, rather crookedly sometimes. He understood about the springs of derelict armchairs. The main disadvantage of Mr. Bodleycott's attentions was his garrulous habit of incessant conversation, slightly hampered by a difficulty in adjusting his false teeth in such a way as to make what he said intelligible in his pronunciation. His memories of past inhabitants of the neighborhood seemed to be unlimited. It was difficult, on the whole, to know how reliable they might be. Mr. Bodleycott was not one to shirk giving himself the pleasure of retailing some really good story of past days. These flights of fancy, claimed usually as flights of memory, were usually ushered in with the same type of statement.
You'd be surprised, you would, if I could tell you what I knew about that one. Yes, indeed.
Well,
You know, everybody thought they knew all about it, but they were wrong. Absolutely wrong. It was the elder sister, you know. Yes, it was. Such a nice girl she seemed. It was the butcher's dog that gave them all the clue. Followed her home, he did. Yes, only it wasn't her own home, as you might say. Oh, well, I could tell you a lot more about that. Then there was old Mrs. Atkins. Nobody knew, as she kept a revolver in the house. But I knew. I knew when I was sent for to mend her tall boy. That's what they call those high chests. Tall boys, yes. Well, that's right. Well, there she was, 75, and in that drawer, the drawer of the tall boy, as I went, you know, to mend, the hinges had gone, the lock, too. That's where the revolver was. Wrapped up it was with a pair of women's shoes, number 3 size. Ah, no, I'm not sure it wasn't number 2. White satin, tiny little foot. Her great-grandmother's wedding shoes, she said. Maybe. But somebody said she bought them at a curiosity shop once, but I don't know about that. And there was the revolver wrapped up, too. Yes. Well, they said as her son had brought it back. Brought it back from East Africa, he did. He'd been out there shooting elephants or something of the kind. And when he came home, he brought this revolver. And you know what that old lady used to do? Her son had taught her to shoot. She'd sit by her drawing-room window looking out, and when people came up the drive, she'd have her revolver with her, and she'd shoot either side of them. Yes! Got them frightened to death, and they ran away. She said she wouldn't have anyone coming in and disturbing the birds. Very keen on the birds, she was. Mind you, she never shot a bird. No, she didn't want to do that. Then there was all the stories about Mrs. Leatherby. Nearly had up, she was. Yes, shoplifting. Very clever at it, so they say, and yet as rich as they make 'em.
Having persuaded Mr. Bodlicott to replace the skylight in the bathroom, Tuppence wondered if she could direct his conversation to any memory of the past which would be useful to Tommy and herself in solving the mystery of the concealment in their house of some treasure or interesting secret of whose nature they had no knowledge whatever. Old Isaac Bodlicott made no difficulties about coming to do repairs for the new tenants of the place. It was one of his pleasures in life to meet as many newcomers as possible. It was in his life one of the main events to be able to come across people who had not so far heard of his splendid memories and reminiscences. Those who were well acquainted with them did not often encourage him to repeat these tales. But a new audience, that was always a pleasant happening. That and displaying the wonderful amount of trades that he managed to combine among his various services to the community in which he lived, it was his pleasure to indulge in a running commentary.
Luck it was as old Joe didn't get cut. Might have ripped his face open.
Yes, it might indeed.
There's a bit more glass wants sweeping up on the floor still, missus.
I know, said Tuppence. We haven't had time yet.
Ah, but you can't take risks with glass. You know what glass is? A little splinter can do all the harm in the world. Die of it you can, if it gets into a blood vessel. I remember Miss Lavinia Shottercombe. You wouldn't believe.
Tuppence was not tempted by Miss Lavinia Shottercombe. She had heard her mentioned by other local characters. She had apparently been between 70 and 80, quite deaf and almost blind.
I suppose, said Tuppence, breaking in before Isaac's reminiscences of Lavinia Shottercombe could begin, that you must know a lot about all the various people and the extraordinary things that have happened in this place in the past.
Ah! Well, I'm not as young as I was, you know. Over 85 I am. Going on 90. I've always had a good memory.
There are things, you know, you don't forget.
No. However long it is, something reminds you of it, you know, and brings it all back to you. The things I could tell you, you wouldn't believe.
Well, it's really wonderful, isn't it? Said Tuppence. To think how much you must know about a lot of extraordinary people.
Ah, no, there's no accounting for people, is there? Ones that aren't what you think they are. Sometimes things as you wouldn't have believed in about them.
Spies, I suppose, sometimes, said Tuppence. Or criminals. She looked at him hopefully. Old Isaac bent and picked up a splinter of glass.
Here you are, he said. How'd you feel if that got in the sole of your foot?
Tuppence began to feel that the replenishing of a glass skylight was not going to yield much in the way of Isaac's more exciting memories of the past. She noticed that the small so-called greenhouse attached to the wall of the house near the dining room window was also in need of repair and replacement by an outlay of money upon glass. Would it be worth repairing, or would it be better to have it pulled down? Isaac was quite pleased to transfer himself to this fresh problem. They went downstairs, and outside the house, walked round its walls until they came to the erection in question.
Ah, you mean that there, do you?
Tuppen said yes, she did mean that there.
K.K.,
said Isaac. Tuppen looked at him. Two letters of the alphabet, such as K.K., really meant nothing to her.
What did you say?
I said K.K. That's what it used to be called in old Mrs. Lottie Jones's time.
Oh, why did she call it K.K.?
I don't know. It was a sort of name, I suppose, they used to have for places like this. You know, it wasn't grand. Bigger houses have a real conservatory, you know, where they have maidenhair ferns in pots.
Yes, said Tuppence, her own memories going back easily to such things.
And a greenhouse you can call it too. But this here, K.K., old Miss Lottie used to call it. Well, I don't know why.
Did they have maidenhair ferns in it?
No, wasn't used for that. No, the children had it for toys, mostly. Well, when you say toys, I expect they're here still if nobody has turned them out. You see, it's half falling down, isn't it? They just stuck up a bit then, and they put a bit of roofing over, and I don't suppose anyone will use it again. They used to bring the broken toys or chairs out here and things like that. But then, you see, they already had the rocking horse there and True Love in the far corner.
Can we get inside it?
Asked Tuppence, trying to apply her eye to a slightly clearer portion of a pane of window.
There must be a lot of queer things inside.
Ah, well, there's the key, said Isaac. I expect it's hanging up in the same place.
Where's the same place?
Ah, there's a shed round here.
They went round an adjacent path. The shed was hardly worthy of being called a shed. Isaac kicked its door open, removed various bits of branches of trees, kicked away some rotting apples, and, removing an old doormat hanging on the wall, showed three or four rusty keys hanging up on a nail.
Lindop's keys, these, he said. Last but one was as living here as a gardener. Retired basket maker, he was. Didn't do no good at anything. If you'd like to see inside K.K.
Oh, yes, said Tuppence hopefully. I'd like to see inside K.K. How do you spell it?
How do you spell what?
Well, I mean, K.K., is it just two letters?
No, I think it was something different. I think it was two foreign words. I seem to remember, now, K.A.I. and then another K.A.I. K.K. or Kai-Kai, almost, they used to say it. I think it was a Japanese word.
Oh, said Tuppence. Did any Japanese people ever live here?
Oh, no, nothing like that. No, not that kind of foreigner.
The application of a little oil, which Isaac seemed to produce and apply quite quickly, had a wonderful effect on the rustiest of the keys, which, when inserted into the lock and turned, opened the door. Tuppence and her guide went in.
There you are,
said Isaac, not displaying any particular pride in the objects within.
Nothing but old rubbish, is it?
Oh, that's a rather wonderful-looking horse, said Tuppence.
Ah, that's Mackild, that is,
said Isaac. Mackild, said Tuppence, rather doubtfully.
Yes, it's a woman's name of some kind. Queen somebody it was. Somebody said as it was William the Conqueror's wife, but I think they were just boasting about that. Come from America, it did. American godfather brought it to one of the children.
To one of the...
One of the Bassington children, that was. Before the other lot. Well, I dunno. I suppose it's all rusted up now.
Matilda was a rather splendid-looking horse, even in decay. Its length was quite the length of any horse or mare to be found nowadays. Only a few hairs were left of what must once have been a prolific mane. One ear was broken off. It had once been painted grey. Its front legs splayed out in front, and its back legs at the back. It had a wispy tail.
It doesn't work like any rocking horse I've ever seen before, said Tuppence, interested.
No, it don't do it, said Isaac. You know, they go up and down, front to back. But this one here, you see, sort of springs forwards. Once first, the front legs do it. Whoop! And then the back legs do it. It's a very good action. Now, if I was to get on it and show you...
Oh, do be careful, said Tuppence. It might... There might be nails or something which would stick into you, or you might fall off.
Ah, I've ridden on Matilda. 50 or 60 years ago it must have been, but I remember. And it's still pretty solid, you know. It's not really falling to bits yet.
With a sudden, unexpected, acrobatic action, he sprang upon Matilda. The horse raced forwards, then raced backwards.
Got action, hasn't it?
Yes, it's got action, said Tuppence.
Ah, they loved that, you know. Miss Jenny, she used to ride it day after day.
Who was Miss Jenny?
Why, she was the eldest one, you know. She was the one that had the godfather as centre this. Centre true love, too, he added.
Tuppence looked at him inquiringly. The remark did not seem to apply to any of the other contents of KK.
That's what they call it, you know. That little horse and cart that's over there in the corner. Used to ride it down the hill, Miss Pamela did. Very serious she was, Miss Pamela. She'd get in at the top of the hill, and she'd put her feet on there. You see, it's meant to have pedals, but they don't work. So she'd take it to the top of the hill, and then she'd let it begin to go down the hill, and she'd put the brakes on, as it were, with her feet. Often she'd end up landing in the monkey puzzle, as a matter of fact.
Well, that sounds very uncomfortable, said Tuppence. I mean, to land in the monkey puzzle.
Ah, well, she could stop herself a bit before that. Very serious she was. She used to do that by the hour. 3 or 4 hours I've watched her. I was doing the Christmas rose bed very often, you know, in the pampas grass, and I'd see her going down. I didn't speak to her because she didn't like being spoken to. She wanted to go on with what she was doing, or what she thought she was doing.
Well, what did she think she was doing? Said Tuppence, beginning suddenly to get more interested in Miss Pamela than she had been in Miss Jenny.
Well, I don't know. She used to say sometimes she was a princess, you know, escaping, or Mary Queen of, what is it, Ireland or Scotland?
Mary Queen of Scots, suggested Tuppence.
Yes, that's right. She went away or something, or escaped. Went into a castle. Lock something it was called. Not a real lock, you know. Piece of water it was.
Ah, yes, I see. And Pamela thought she was Mary Queen of Scots escaping from her enemies.
That's right. Going to throw herself into England, on Queen Elizabeth's mercy, she said. But I don't think as Queen Elizabeth was very merciful.
Well, said Tuppence, masking any disappointment she felt, it's all very interesting, I'm sure. Who were these people, did you say?
Oh, they were the Listers, they were.
Did you ever know a Mary Jordan?
Ah, I know who you mean. No, she was before my time a bit, I think. You mean the German spy girl, don't you?
Well, everyone seems to know about her here, said Tuppence.
Yes, they called her the Fraulein or something. Sounds like a railway.
It does, rather, said Tuppence.
Isaac suddenly laughed.
he said. If it was a railway line. A railway line? Oh, it didn't run straight, did it? No, indeed.
he laughed again.
What a splendid joke, said Tuppence kindly.
Isaac laughed again.
It's about time, he said. You thought of putting some vegetables in, isn't it? You know, if you want to get your broad beans on in good time, you ought to put them in and prepare for the peas. And what about some early lettuce? Tom Thumbs now. Beautiful lettuce, those. Small, but crisp as anything.
I suppose you've done a lot of gardening work round here. I don't mean just this house, but a lot of places.
Ah, yes, I've done odd jobbing, you know. I used to come along to most of the houses. Some of the gardeners they had weren't any good at all, and I'd usually come in and help at certain times or other. Had a bit of an accident here once, you know. Mistake about vegetables. Before my time, but I heard about it.
Something about foxglove leaves, wasn't it? Said Tuppence.
Ah, fancy you having heard of that already. That was a long time ago, too. Yes, several was taken ill with it. One of them died. At least so I heard. That was only hearsay. Old pal of mine told me that.
I think it was the Fraulein, said Tuppence.
What? The Fraulein has died? Well, I never heard that.
Well, perhaps I'm wrong, said Tuppence. Supposing you take true love, she said,
or whatever this thing's called, and put it on the hill, in the place where that child Pamela used to take it down the hill. If the hill is still there.
Well, of course the hill's still there. What do you think? It's all grass still. But be careful now. I don't know how much of true love is rusted away. I'll have a bit of a clean-up on it first, shall I?
Well, that's right, said Tuppence. Then you can think of a list of vegetables that we ought to be getting on with.
Ah, well, I'll be careful you don't get foxglove and spinach planted together. Shouldn't like to hear that something happened to you when you just got into a new house. Nice place here, if you can just have a little money to spend on it.
Thank you very much, said Tuppence.
And I'll just see to that there true love, so it won't break down under you. It's very old, but you'd be surprised the way some old things work.
Why, I knew a cousin of mine the other day, and he got out an old bicycle. You wouldn't think it would go. Nobody had ridden on it for about 40 years.
But it went all right, with a bit of oil. Ah, it's wonderful what a bit of oil can do.
Chapter 3 Six Impossible Things Before Breakfast.
What on earth? Said Tommy.
He was used to finding Tuppence in unlikely spots when he returned to the house, but on this occasion he was more startled than usual. Inside the house there was no trace of her, although outside there was a very slight patter of rain. It occurred to him that she might be engrossed in some portion of the garden, and he went out to see if this might be the case. But it was then that he remarked,
What on earth?
Hello, Tommy, said Tuppence. You're back a bit earlier than I thought you would be.
What is that thing?
You mean true love?
What did you say?
I said true love, said Tuppence.
That's the name of it.
Are you trying to go for a ride on it?
It's much too small for you.
Well, of course it is. It's a child sort of thing. What you had, I suppose, before you had fairy cycles, or whatever one had in my youth.
Well, it doesn't really go, does it?
Asked Tommy. Well, not exactly, said Tuppence. But you see, you take it up to the top of the hill, and then, well, its wheels turn of their own accord, you see, and because of the hill, you go down.
And crash at the bottom, I suppose. Is that what you've been doing?
Not at all, said Tuppence. You break it with your feet. Would you like me to give you a demonstration?
I don't think so, said Tommy. It's beginning to rain rather harder. I just wanted to know why you, well, why you're doing it. I mean, it can't be very enjoyable, can it?
Actually, said Tuppence, it's rather frightening. But you see, I just wanted to find out, and are you asking this tree?
What is this tree, anyway? A monkey puzzle, isn't it?
That's right, said Tuppence.
How clever of you to know.
Well, of course I know, said Tommy.
I know its other name, too.
So do I, said Tuppence.
They looked at each other.
Only, at the moment, I've forgotten it, said Tommy.
Is it an arty... Well, it's something very like that, said Tuppence. I think that's good enough, don't you?
What are you doing inside a prickly thing like that?
Well, because when you get to the end of the hill, I mean, if you didn't put your feet down to stop completely, you could be in the arty, or whatever it is.
Do I mean arty? What about urticaria?
No, that's nettles, isn't it?
Oh, well, said Tommy. Everyone to their own kind of amusement.
I was just doing a little investigation, you know, of our latest problem.
Your problem? My problem? Whose problem?
I don't know, said Tuppence.
Both our problems, I hope. But not one of Beatrice's problems or anything like that.
Oh, no. It's just that I wondered what other things there might be hidden in this house. So I went and looked at a lot of toys that seemed to have been shoved away in a sort of queer old greenhouse, probably years and years ago. And there was this creature, and there was Matilda, which is a rocking horse with a hole in its stomach.
A hole in its stomach?
Well, yes. People, I suppose, used to shove things in there. Children, for fun. And lots of old leaves and dirty papers and bits of sort of queer dusters and flannel, oily stuff that had been used to clean things with.
Come on. Let's go into the house, said Tommy.
Well, Tommy, said Tuppence, as she stretched out her feet to a pleasant wood fire, which she had lit already for his return in the drawing room. Let's have your news. Did you go to the Ritz Hotel Gallery to see the show?
No, as a matter of fact, I hadn't time, really.
What do you mean you hadn't time? I thought that's what you went for.
Well, one doesn't always do the things that one went for.
Well, you must have gone somewhere and done something, said Tuppence.
I found a new possible place to park a car.
Oh, that's always useful, said Tuppence. Where was that?
Near Hounslow.
What on earth did you want to go to Hounslow for?
Well, I didn't actually go to Hounslow. There's a sort of car park there, and then I took the tube, you know?
What, a tube to London?
Yes, yes, it seemed the easiest way.
You have rather a guilty look about you, said Tuppence. Don't tell me I have a rival who lives in Hounslow.
No, said Tommy. You ought to be pleased with what I've been doing.
Oh, have you been buying me a present?
No, no, said Tommy. I'm afraid not. I never know what to give you, as a matter of fact.
Well, your guesses are very good sometimes, said Tuppence hopefully. What have you really been doing, Tommy? And why should I be pleased?
Because I, too, said Tommy, have been doing research.
Everyone's doing research nowadays, said Tuppence. You know, all the teenagers, and all one's nephews or cousins or other people's sons and daughters, they're all doing research. I don't know actually what they do research into nowadays, but they never seem to do it, whatever it is, afterwards. They just have the research, and a good time doing the research, and then they're pleased with themselves, and, well, I don't quite know what does come next.
Betty, our adopted daughter, went to East Africa, said Tommy. Have you heard from her?
Yes, she loves it there. Loves poking into African families and writing articles about them.
Do you think the families appreciate her interest? Asked Tommy.
Well, I shouldn't think so, said Tuppence. In my father's parish, I remember, everyone disliked the district visitors. Nosy parkers, they called them.
You may have something there, said Tommy.
You're certainly pointing out to me the difficulties of what I'm undertaking,
or trying to undertake.
Research into what?
Not lawnmowers, I hope.
I don't know why you mentioned lawnmowers. Because you're eternally looking at catalogues of them, said Tuppence. You're mad about getting a lawnmower.
In this house of ours, it is historic research we are doing into things, crimes and others that seem to have happened at least 60 or 70 years ago.
Anyway, come on, tell me more about your research projects, Tommy.
I went to London, said Tommy, and put certain things in motion.
Ah, said Tuppence. Research? Research in motion?
In a way, I've been doing the same thing that you are, only our methods are different, and my period is very far back.
Do you mean that you're really beginning to take an interest in the problem of Mary Jordan?
So that's how you put it on the agenda nowadays, said Tommy.
It's definitely taken shape, has it? The mystery or the problem of Mary Jordan? Such a very ordinary name, too.
Couldn't have been her right name if she was German, said Tuppence.
And she was said to be a German spy, or something like that. But she could have been English, I suppose.
I think the German story is just a kind of legend.
Do go on, Tommy. You're not telling me anything.
Well, I put certain...
Don't go on saying certain, said Tuppence. I really can't understand.
Well, it's very difficult to explain things sometimes, said Tommy. But I mean, there are certain ways of making inquiries.
You mean things in the past?
Yes, in a sense. I mean, there are things that you can find out, things that you could obtain information from. Not just by riding old toys and asking old ladies to remember things and cross-questioning an old gardener who probably will tell you everything quite wrong, or going round to the post office and upsetting the staff by asking the girls there to tell their memories of what their great-great-aunts once said.
All of them have produced a little something, said Tuppence.
So will mine, said Tommy.
You've been making inquiries? Who do you go to ask your questions?
Well, it's not quite like that. But you must remember, Tuppence, that occasionally in my life I have been in connection with people who do know how to go about these sort of things. You know, there are people you pay a certain sum to, and they do the research for you from the proper quarters, so that what you get is quite authentic.
What sort of things? What sort of places?
Well, there are lots of things. To begin with, you can get somebody to study deaths, births, and marriages, that sort of thing.
Oh, I suppose you send them to Somerset House.
Do you go there for deaths as well as marriages?
And births.
One needn't go oneself. You get someone to go for you, and find out when someone dies, or read somebody's will, look up marriages in churches, or study birth certificates. All those things can be inquired into.
Have you been spending a lot of money? Asked Tuppence. I thought we were going to try and economize once we'd paid the expense of moving in here.
Well, considering the interest you're taking in problems, I consider that this can be regarded in the way of money well spent.
Well, did you find out anything?
Or not as quickly as this. You have to wait until the research has been made. Then, if they can get answers for you,
You mean somebody comes up and tells you that someone called Mary Jordan was born in Little Sheffield on the Wold, or something like that, and then you go and make inquiries there later? Is that the sort of thing?
Not exactly. And then there are census returns, and death certificates, and causes of death, and, oh, quite a lot of things you can find out about.
Well, said Tuppence, it sounds rather interesting anyway, which is always something.
And there are files in newspaper offices that you can read and study.
You mean accounts of something like murders or court cases?
Not necessarily, but one has had contact with certain people from time to time, people who know things. And one can look them up, ask a few questions, renew old friendships. Like the time we were being a private detective firm in London. There are a few people, I expect, who could give us information or tell us where to go. Things do depend a bit on who you know.
Yes, said Tuppence, that's quite true. I know that myself from experience.
Our methods aren't the same, said Tommy. I think yours are just as good as mine. I'll never forget the day I came suddenly into that boarding house, whatever it was, Sans Souci. The first thing I saw was you sitting there knitting and calling yourself Mrs. Blenkinsop.
All because I hadn't applied research or got anyone to do research for me, said Tuppence.
No, said Tommy. You got inside a wardrobe next door to the room where I was being interviewed in a very interesting manner. So you knew exactly where I was being sent and what I was meant to do, and you managed to get there first, eavesdropping, neither more nor less, most dishonorable.
With very satisfactory results, said Tuppence.
Yes, said Tommy. You have a kind of feeling for success. It seems to happen to you.
Well, some day we shall know all about everything here. Only it's all such years and years ago. I can't help thinking that the idea of something really important being hidden round here, or owned by someone here, or something to do with this house, or people who once lived in it being important. I can't just believe it somehow.
Oh, well. I see what we shall have to do next.
What? Said Tommy.
Believe 6 impossible things before breakfast, of course, said Tuppence. It's 11:15 now, and I want to go to bed. I'm tired, I'm sleepy, and extremely dirty because of playing around with all those dusty ancient toys and things. I expect there are even more things in that place that's called... By the way, why is it called KK?
I don't know. Do you spell it at all?
I don't know. I think it's spelled K-A-I, not just KK.
Because it sounds more mysterious.
It sounds Japanese, said Tuppence doubtfully.
I can't see why it should sound to you like Japanese. It doesn't to me.
Sounds like something you eat.
A kind of rice, perhaps.
I'm going to bed to wash thoroughly and get all the cobwebs off me somehow, said Tuppence.
Remember, said Tommy, 6 impossible things before breakfast.
I expect I shall be better at it than you would be, said Tuppence.
You're very unexpected sometimes, said Tommy.
You're more often right than I am, said Tuppence.
That's very annoying sometimes.
Well, these things are sent to try us.
Who used to say that to us? Quite often, too.
Never mind, said Tommy. Go and clean the dust of bygone years off you.
Is Isaac any good at gardening?
He considers he is, said Tuppence. We might experiment with him.
Unfortunately, we don't know much about gardening ourselves.
Yet another problem.
Chapter 4 Expedition on True Love, Oxford and Cambridge.
6 impossible things before breakfast, indeed, said Tuppence, as she drained a cup of coffee and considered a fried egg remaining in the dish on the sideboard, flanked by 2 appetizing-looking kidneys.
Breakfast is more worthwhile than thinking of impossible things. Tommy is the one who has gone after impossible things. Research, indeed. I wonder if he'll get anything out of it all.
She applied herself to fried egg and kidneys.
How nice, said Tuppence, to have a different kind of breakfast. For a long time she had managed to regale herself in the morning with a cup of coffee and either orange juice or grapefruit. Although satisfactory so long as any weight problems were thereby solved, the pleasures of this kind of breakfast were not much appreciated. From the force of contrasts, hot dishes on the sideboard animated the digestive juices.
I expect, said Tuppence, it's what the Parkinsons used to have for breakfast here.
Fried egg or poached egg and bacon, perhaps. She threw her mind a good long way back to remembrances of old novels.
Perhaps, yes, perhaps cold grouse on the sideboard. Delicious.
Oh,
Oh, yes, I remember. Delicious it sounded. Of course, I suppose children were so unimportant that they only let them have the legs. Legs of game are very good because you could nibble at them. She paused, with the last piece of kidney in her mouth. Very strange noises seemed to be coming through the doorway. I wonder, said Tuppence. It sounds like a concert gone wrong somewhere. She paused again, a piece of toast in her hand, and looked up as Albert entered the room. What is going on, Albert? Demanded Tuppence. Don't tell me that's our workman playing something, a harmonium or something like that. Oh, it's the gentleman what's come to do the piano, said Albert. Come to do what to the piano? To tune it. You said I'd have to get a piano tuner. Good gracious, said Tuppence. You've done it already? How wonderful you are, Albert. Albert looked pleased, though at the same time conscious of the fact that he was very wonderful in the speed with which he could usually supply the extraordinary demands made upon him sometimes by Tuppence, and sometimes by Tommy. He says it needs it very bad, he said. I expect it does, said Tuppence. She drank half a cup of coffee, went out of the room and into the drawing room. A young man was at work at the grand piano, which was revealing to the world large quantities of its inside. Good morning, madam, said the young man. Good morning, said Tuppence. I'm so glad you managed to come. Ah, it needs tuning, it does. Yes, said Tuppence, I know. You see, we've only just moved in, and it's not very good for pianos being moved into houses and things, and it hasn't been tuned for a long time. No, I can soon tell that, said the young man. He pressed three different chords in turn, two cheerful ones in a major key, and one very melancholy one in A minor. A beautiful instrument, madam, if I may say so. Yes, said Tuppence. It's an Erard, and a piano you wouldn't get so easily nowadays. It's been through a few troubles, said Tuppence. It's been through bombing in London. Our house there was hit. Luckily we were away, but it was mostly outside that was damaged. Yes, yes, the works are good. They don't need so very much doing to them. Conversation continued pleasantly. The young man played the opening bars of a Chopin prelude, and passed from that to a rendering of the Blue Danube. Presently he announced that his ministrations had finished. I shouldn't leave it too long, he warned her. I'd like the chance to come and try it again before too much time has gone by, because you don't quite know when it might not, well, I don't know how I should put it, relapse a bit. You know, some little thing that you haven't noticed or haven't been able to get at. They parted with mutually appreciative remarks on music in general, and on piano music in particular, and with the polite salutations of two people who agreed very largely in their ideas as to the joys that music generally played in life. Needs a lot doing to it, I expect, this house, he said, looking round him. Well, I think it had been empty for some time when we came into it. Oh, yes. It's changed hands a lot, you know. Got quite a history, hasn't it? Said Tuppence. I mean, the people who lived in it in the past and the sort of queer things that happened. Ah, well, I expect you're talking of that time long ago. I don't know if it was in the last war or the one before. Something to do with naval secrets or something? Said Tuppence, hopefully. Could be, I expect. There was a lot of talk, so they tell me. But of course I don't know anything about it myself. Well before your time, said Tuppence, looking appreciatively at his youthful countenance. When he had gone, she sat down at the piano. I'll play The Rain on the Roof, said Tuppence, who had had this Chopin memory revived in her by the piano tuner's execution of one of the other preludes. Then she dropped into some chords and began playing the accompaniment to a song, humming it first and then murmuring the words as well. Where has my true love gone a-roaming? Where has my true love gone from me? High in the woods the birds are calling. When will my true love come back to me? I'm playing it in the wrong key, I believe, said Tuppence. But at any rate, the piano's all right again now. Oh, it is great fun to be able to play the piano again. Where has my true love gone a-roaming? She murmured. When will my true love... True love, said Tuppence thoughtfully. True love. Yes, I'm thinking of that perhaps as a sign. Perhaps I'd better go out and do something with true love. She put on her thick shoes and a pullover and went out into the garden. True love had been pushed not back into his former home in KK, but into the empty stable. Tuppence took him out, pulled him to the top of the grass slope,
gave him a sharp flick with the duster she had brought out with her to remove the worst of the cobwebs, which still adhered in many places, got into Truelove, placed her feet on the pedals, and induced Truelove to display his paces as well as he could in his condition of general age and wear. "Now, my Truelove," she said, "down the hill with you, and not too fast." She removed her feet from the pedals and placed them in a position where she could brake with them when necessary. Truelove was not inclined to go very fast in spite of the advantage to him of having only to go by weight down the hill. However, the slope increased in steepness suddenly. Truelove increased his pace. Tuppence applied her feet as brakes rather more sharply, and she and Truelove arrived together at a rather more uncomfortable portion than usual of the monkey puzzle at the bottom of the hill. "Most painful," said Tuppence, excavating herself. Having extricated herself from the pricking of various portions of the monkey puzzle, Tuppence brushed herself down and looked round her. She had come to a thick bit of shrubbery leading up the hill in the opposite direction. There were rhododendron bushes there, and hydrangeas. It would look, Tuppence thought, very lovely later in the year. At the moment, there was no particular beauty about it. It was a mere thicket. However, she did seem to notice that there had once been a pathway leading up between the various flower bushes and shrubs. Everything was much grown together now, but you could trace the direction of the path. Tuppence broke off a branch or two, pressed her way through the first bushes, and managed to follow the hill. The path went winding up. It was clear that nobody had ever cleared it or walked down it for years. "I wonder where it takes one," said Tuppence. "There must be a reason for it." Perhaps, she thought, as the path took a couple of sharp turns in opposite directions, making a zigzag and making Tuppence feel that she knew exactly what Alice in Wonderland had meant by saying that a path would suddenly shake itself and change direction. There were fewer bushes. There were laurels now, possibly fitting in with the name given to the property. And then a rather stony, difficult, narrow path wound up between them. It came very suddenly to four moss-covered steps, leading up to a kind of niche, made of what had once been metal, and later seemed to have been replaced by bottles. A kind of shrine. And in it, a pedestal. And on this pedestal, a stone figure, very much decayed. It was the figure of a boy with a basket on his head. A feeling of recognition came to Tuppence. "This is the sort of thing you could date a place with," she said. "It's very like the one Aunt Sarah had in her garden. She had a lot of laurels, too." Her mind went back to Aunt Sarah, whom she had occasionally visited as a child. She had played herself, she remembered, a game called River Horses. For River Horses, you took your hoop out. Tuppence, it may be said, had been 6 years old at the time. Her hoop represented the horses, white horses with manes and flowing tails. In Tuppence's imagination, with that you had gone across a green, rather thick patch of grass, and you had then gone round a bend planted with pampas grass, waving feathery heads into the air, up the same kind of a path, and leaning there among some beech trees, in the same sort of summer-house niche, was a figure and a basket. Tuppence, when riding her winning horses here, had taken a gift always, a gift you put in the basket on top of the boy's head. At the same time, you said it was an offering, and you made a wish. The wish, Tuppence remembered, was nearly always to come true. "But that," said Tuppence, sitting down suddenly on the top step of the flight she had been climbing, "that, of course, was because I cheated, really. I mean, I wished for something that I knew was almost sure to happen, and then I could feel that my wish had come true, and it really was a magic. It was a proper offering to a real god from the past, though it wasn't a god, really. It was just a podgy-looking little boy. Ah, well, what fun it is. All the things one used to invent and believe in and play at." She sighed, went down the path again, and found her way to the mysteriously named KK. KK looked in just the same mess as ever. Matilda was still looking forlorn and forsaken, but two more things attracted Tuppence's attention. They were in porcelain. Porcelain stools, with the figures of white swans curled round them. One stool was dark blue, and the other stool was pale blue. "Of course," said Tuppence. "I've seen things like that before when I was young. Yes, they used to be on verandas. One of my other aunts had them, I think. We used to call them Oxford and Cambridge. Very much the same.
I think it was ducks. No, it was swans they had round them. And then there was the same sort of queer thing in the seat, a sort of hole that was like a letter S. The sort of thing you could put things into. Yes, I think I'll get Isaac to take these two stools out of here and give them a good wash, and then we'll have them on the loggia, or lodger, as he will insist on calling it, though veranda comes more naturally to me. We'll put them on that and enjoy them when the good weather comes. She turned and started to run towards the door. Her foot caught in Matilda's obtrusive rocker. Oh, dear, said Tuppence. Now what have I done? What she had done was to catch her foot in the dark blue porcelain stool, and it rolled down to the floor and smashed in two pieces. Oh, dear, said Tuppence. Now I've really killed Oxford, I suppose. We shall have to make do with Cambridge. I didn't think you could stick Oxford together again. The pieces are too difficult. She sighed, and wondered what Tommy was doing. Tommy was sitting exchanging memories with some old friends.
World's in a funny way nowadays, said Colonel Atkinson. I hear you and your, what's her name? Prudence? No, you had a nickname for her. Oh, Tuppence, that's right. Yes, I hear you've gone to live in the country, somewhere down near Hollowkey. I wonder what took you there. Anything in particular?
Well, we found this house fairly cheap, said Tommy.
Ah, well, that's lucky always, isn't it? What's the name? You must give me your address.
Well, we think we may call it Cedar Lodge, because there's a very nice cedar there. Its original name was the Laurels, but that's rather a Victorian hangover, isn't it? The Laurels. The Laurels Hollowkey.
My word. What are you up to, eh? What are you up to?
Tommy looked at the elderly face with the sprouting white moustache.
Onto something, are you? Said Colonel Atkinson. Are you employed in the service of your country again?
Oh, I'm too old for that, said Tommy. I'm retired from all that sort of stuff.
Ah, I wonder now. Perhaps that's just the thing you say. Perhaps you've been told to say that. After all, you know, there's a good deal. Was never found out about all that business.
What business? Said Tommy.
Well, I expect you read about it or heard about it. The Cardington scandal. You know, came after that other thing, the, what do you call them, letters, and the Emlyn Johnson submarine business.
Oh, said Tommy.
I seem to remember something vaguely. Well, it wasn't actually the submarine business, but that's what called attention to the whole thing, and there were those letters, you see. Gave the whole show away politically. Yes, letters. If they'd been able to get hold of them, it would have made a big difference. It would have drawn attention to several people who at the time were the most highly trusted people in the government. Astonishing how these things happen, isn't it? You know, the traitors in one's midst, always highly trusted, always splendid fellows, always the last people to be suspected. And all the time, well, a lot of that never came to light.
He winked one eye.
Perhaps you've been sent down there to have a look round, eh, my boy?
A look round at what? Said Tommy.
Well, this house of yours. The Laurels, did you say? There used to be some silly jokes about the Laurels sometimes. Mind you, they'd had a good look round, the security people and the rest of them. They thought that somewhere in that house was valuable evidence of some kind. There was an idea that it had been sent overseas, Italy was mentioned, just before people got alerted. But other people thought it might still be hidden there, in that part of the world somewhere. You know, it's the sort of place that has cellars and flagstones and various things.
Come now, Tommy, my boy. I feel you're on the hunt again.
I assure you, I don't do anything of that kind nowadays.
Well, that's what one thought before about you, when you were at that other place, beginning of the last war. You know, when you ran down that German chap, that and the woman with the nursery rhyme books.
Yes, sharp bit of work, all that. And now, perhaps they've set you on another trail.
Nonsense. Said Tommy.
You mustn't get all these ideas in your head. I'm an old gaffer now.
You're a cunning old dog.
I bet you're better than some of these young ones.
Yes, you sit there looking innocent. And really, I expect... Well, one mustn't ask you questions. Mustn't ask you to betray state secrets, must I? Anyway, be careful of your missus. You know she's always one to stick herself forward too much. She had a narrow escape last time in the NRM days.
Ah, well... said Tommy. I think Tuppence is just interested in the general antiquity of this place, you know. Who lived there and where? And pictures of the old people who used to live in the house and all the rest of it, that and planning the garden, that's all we're really interested in nowadays. Gardens. Gardens and bulb catalogues and all the rest of it. Well, maybe I'll believe that if a year passes and nothing exciting has happened. But I know you, Beresford. And I know our Mrs. Beresford, too. The two of you together, you're a wonderful couple, and I bet you'll come up with something. I tell you, if those papers ever come to light, it'll have a very, very great effect on the political front, and there are several people who won't be pleased. No, indeed. And those people who won't be pleased are looked on as pillars of rectitude at the moment, but by some they are thought to be dangerous. Remember that. They're dangerous. And the ones that aren't dangerous are in contact with those who are dangerous. So you be careful, and make your missus be careful too. Really, said Tommy, your ideas make me feel quite excited. Well, go on feeling excited, but look after Mrs. Tuppence. I'm fond of Tuppence. She's a nice girl. Always was, and still is. Hardly a girl, said Tommy. Now don't say that of your wife. Don't get in that habit. 1 in 1,000 she is. But I'm sorry for someone who has her in the picture sleuthing him down. She's probably out on the hunt today. I don't think she is. More likely gone to tea with an elderly lady. Ah, well, elderly ladies can sometimes give you useful information. Elderly ladies and children of 5 years old. All the unlikely people come out sometimes with a truth nobody had ever dreamed of. I could tell you things. I'm sure you could, Colonel. Ah, well, one mustn't give away secrets. Colonel Atkinson shook his head. On his way home, Tommy stared out of the railway carriage window and watched the rapidly retreating countryside. I wonder, he said to himself, I really wonder. That old boy, he's usually in the know, knows things. But what can there be that could matter now? It's all in the past. I mean, there's nothing. There can't be anything left from the Great War. Not nowadays. Then he wondered. New ideas had taken over. Common market ideas. Somewhere, as it were behind his mind rather than in it, was the thought that there were grandsons and nephews, new generations, younger members of families that had always meant something, that had got pull, had got positions of influence, of power, because they were born who they were, and if by any chance they were not loyal, they could be approached, could believe in new creeds or in old creeds revived, whichever way you like to think of it. England was in a funny state, a different state from what it had been. Or was it really always in the same state, always underneath the smooth surface there was some black mud? There wasn't clear water down to the pebbles, down to the shells lying on the bottom of the sea. There was something moving, something sluggish somewhere, something that had to be found, suppressed. But surely not. Surely not in a place like Hollowkey. Hollowkey was a has-been, if ever there was one. Developed first as a fishing village, and then further developed as an English Riviera, and now a mere summer resort only crowded in August. Most people now preferred package trips abroad. Well, said Tuppence, as she left the dinner table that night and went into the other room to drink coffee, was it fun or not fun? How are all the old boys? Oh, very much the old boys, said Tommy. How is your old lady? Oh, the piano tuner came, said Tuppence, and it rained in the afternoon, so I didn't see her. Rather a pity. The old lady might have said some things that were interesting. My old boy did, said Tommy. I was quite surprised. What do you think of this place, really, Tuppence? What, do you mean the house? No, I didn't mean the house. I think I mean Hollowkey. Well, I think it's a nice place. Now, what do you mean by nice? Well, it's a good word, really. It's a word one usually despises, but I don't know why one should. I suppose a place that's nice is a place where things don't happen and you don't want them to happen. You're glad they don't. Ah, that's because of our age, I suppose. No, I don't think it's because of that. It's because it's nice to know there are places where things don't happen. Though I must say, something nearly happened today. Well, what do you mean by nearly happened? Have you been doing anything silly, Tuppence? No, of course I haven't.
Well, then what do you mean?
I mean, that pane of glass at the top of the greenhouse, you know, it was trembling the other day a bit, had the twitches. Well, it practically came down on my head. Might have cut me to bits.
Well, it doesn't seem to have cut you to bits, said Tommy, looking at her.
No, I was lucky. But still, it made me jump, rather.
Oh, well, we'll have to get our old boy who comes and does things. What's his name?
Isaac, isn't it?
Have to get him to look at some of the other panes. I mean, we don't want you being done in, Tuppence.
Well, I suppose when you buy an old house, there's always something wrong with it.
Do you think there's something wrong with this house, Tuppence?
What on earth do you mean by wrong with this house?
Well, because I heard something rather queer about it today.
What, queer about this house?
Yes.
Really, Tommy, that seems impossible, said Tuppence.
Well, why does it seem impossible? Because it looks so nice and innocent, well-painted and done up.
No, well-painted and done up and looking innocent, that's all due to us. It looked rather shabby and decayed when we bought it.
Well, of course. That's why it was cheap.
You look peculiar, Tommy, said Tuppence. What is it?
Well, it was old Mustachio Monte, you know.
Oh, dear old boy, yes.
Did he send his love to me?
Yes, he certainly did.
He told me to make you take care of yourself,
and me to take care of you.
Oh, he always says that. Though why I should take care of myself here, I don't know. Well, it seems it's the sort of place you might have to take care of yourself.
Now, what on earth do you mean by that, Tommy?
Tuppence, what would you think if I said that he suggested, or hinted, whatever way you like, that we were here not as old retired has-beens, but as people on active service? That we were once more, as in the NRM days, on duty here, sent here by forces of security and order to discover something, to find out what was wrong with this place.
I don't know if you're dreaming, Tommy, or if it was old Mustachio Monte who was, if it was he who suggested it.
Well, he did. He seemed to think that we were definitely here on some kind of mission, to find something.
To find something? What sort of thing?
Something that might be hidden in this house.
Something that might be hidden in this house? Tommy, are you mad? Or was he mad?
Well, I rather thought he might be mad, but I'm not so sure.
What could there be to find in this house?
Well, something that I suppose was once hidden here.
Buried treasure, are you talking about? Russian crown jewels hidden in the basement? What sort of thing?
No, not treasure, something that would be dangerous to someone.
Well, that's very odd, said Tuppence.
Why, have you found something?
Well, no, of course I haven't found anything, but it seems there was a scandal about this place donkeys years ago. I don't mean anyone actually remembers, but it's the sort of thing that your grandmother told you, or the servants gossiped about. Actually, Beatrice has a friend who seemed to know something about it, and Mary Jordan was mixed up in it. It was all very hush-hush.
Are you imagining things, Tuppence? Have you gone back to the glorious days of our youth, to the time when someone gave a girl on the Lusitania something secret? The days when we had adventure, when we tracked down the enigmatic Mr. Brown? Oh, goodness, that was a long time ago, Tommy. The young adventurers, we called ourselves. Doesn't seem real now, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Not a bit.
But it was real.
Yes, it was real, all right.
Such a lot of things are real, though you can't really bring yourself to believe it.
Must be at least 50 years ago.
More than that, even.
What did Monty actually say?
Letters or papers of some kind, said Tommy. Something that would have created, or did create, some great political upheaval of some kind. Someone in a position of power, and who oughtn't to have been in a position of power. And there were letters or papers or something that would definitely cook his goose if they ever came to light. All sorts of intrigues. And all happening years ago.
In the time of Mary Jordan?
It sounds very unlikely, said Tuppence.
Tommy, you must have gone to sleep in the train coming back and dreamt all this.
Well, perhaps I did, said Tommy. It certainly doesn't seem likely.
Well, I suppose we might as well have a look round, said Tuppence, as we are living here.
Her eyes passed round the room.
I shouldn't think there'd be anything hidden here, would you, Tommy?
It doesn't seem the sort of house where anything would have been likely to be hidden.
Lots of other people have lived in the house since those days.
Yes, family after family, as far as I can make out.
Well, I suppose it might be hidden up in an attic, or down in the cellar, or perhaps buried under the summer house floor. Anywhere.
Anyway, it'll be quite fun, said Tuppence. Perhaps, you know, when we haven't got anything else to do and our backs are aching because of planting tulip bulbs, we might have a little sort of look round, you know, just to think. Starting from the point, if I wanted to hide something, where would I choose to put it? And where would it be likely to remain undiscovered?
I don't think anything could remain undiscovered here, said Tommy, with gardeners and people, you know, tearing up the place, and different families living here, and house agents and everything else.
Well, you never know. It might be in a teapot somewhere.
Tuppence rose to her feet, went towards the mantelpiece, stood up on a stool, and took down a Chinese teapot. She took off the lid and peered inside.
Nothing there, she said.
A most unlikely place, said Tommy.
Do you think, said Tuppence,
with a voice that was more hopeful than despondent,
that somebody was trying to put an end to me and loosened the glass skylight in the conservatory so that it would fall on me?
Most unlikely, said Tommy. It was probably meant to fall on old Isaac.
Well, that's a disappointing thought, said Tuppence. I would like to feel that I had had a great escape.
Well, you'd better be careful of yourself. I shall be careful of you, too.
You always fuss over me, said Tuppence.
It's very nice of me to do so, said Tommy. You should be very pleased to have a husband who fusses about you.
Nobody tried to shoot you in the train, or derail it or anything, did they? Said Tuppence.
No, said Tommy. But we'd better look at the car brakes before we go out driving next time.
Of course, this is all completely ridiculous, he added.
Oh, of course it is, said Tuppence.
Absolutely ridiculous. All the same...
All the same what?
Well, it's sort of fun just to think of things like that.
Well, you mean Alexander was killed because he knew something? Asked Tommy.
He knew something about who killed Mary Jordan. It was one of us. Tuppence's face lit up.
Us, she said with emphasis. We'll have to know just all about us.
And us, here in this house, in the past, it's a crime we've got to solve. Go back to the past to solve it, to where it happened and why it happened. That's a thing we've never tried to do before.